So with that, I'll call this meeting to order at 8:36. Roll call, please.
Commissioner Escobar is absent. Commissioner Amparano?
Here.
Commissioner Hawk?
Here.
Commissioner Salgado?
Here.
Commissioner Marroquin?
Here.
All right, let's stand for the Pledge of Allegiance, please.
Sylvia, it's your house. Want to lead us, please?
Yes. Please join me in honoring the flag of our nation. Hand over your heart. Ready? Begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right, thank you very much for that. With that, we'll move on to public comment. Did we have any public comments via email, electronic, or anything? No. Seeing that nobody's rushing the podium, I'm gonna move on to consent items for minutes for March 27th. Everybody get a chance to review that?
Here,
Still,
I'll move approve.
Okay, I'll second. I got a motion second. Roll call vote, please.
Commissioner Amparano?
Yes.
Commissioner Hawk?
Yes.
Mr. Salgado?
Yes.
Commissioner Marroquin?
Yes.
Thank you very much for that. Commissioner announcements. We'll start on my left, Ms. Marroquin.
Let's see. We have quite a few events that are coming up here in the city of El Centro. One of them that was postponed from last week, the Ice Cream Social on Main Street, has been rescheduled for Friday, May the 30th from 6 to 9 p.m. in the town square. You caught me off guard. I'm sorry. But that's what's coming up in the near future, so we invite all the community to attend, because we do have some pretty popular events. And this one is one that had not happened in more than 10 years. So it was brought back. It was revived.
So. Glad to hear that. Thank you. Mr. Salgado?
Nothing to report. Thank you.
Mr. Hall?
Nothing to report.
And I got nothing to report on my end. Mr.
Okay, I have a couple of items on this last Tuesday. Southern Region had a focus group meeting with the consultant to put it bluntly, try to fix Cal Lafco's. It was about a 3-hour meeting with just the Southern Region. She's visiting all the regions, and it was a lot of good input and a lot of raw emotions in the meeting, but it was very educational for us. So it appears that Cal Lafco board got the message, and the goal is to get everybody back into the currently there's as of July 1st, there'll be 5 Lafcos that aren't part of the organization, 4 of them from the Southern Region. So also on next Tuesday, if that's the 28th, Tuesday or Wednesday, County Public Works and myself was having a meeting with the special districts on the proposed RFP about potential consolidation of some of these special districts, since the counties has taken over some already. And so it'd be to have a written plan of what that would look like moving forward in the case that the county has to absorb some of these water districts or sewer districts and what have you. So we're having a pre-meeting to try to make sure that there's no, so there's an understanding of exactly what the RFP is and isn't, so they don't get panicked when they see it. So
you're meeting with Public Works?
The panic from the special districts, like, in other words, you're taking us over. That's not,
yeah.
No, it's okay. Just a contingency plan. And we want to just be clear and answer the questions.
But who are you meeting with?
Pearl County Public Works, myself, and we send invitation out to the special districts.
Okay.
Right. When we say special districts, we're not just talking IID. We're talking all utilities, water, gas, communications, whatever.
Sewer. Currently, the county is running some water districts, some fire districts, some sewer districts. So, yeah, it's anything that the county would potentially have to step in and take over. So it's good to have a plan. So,
absolutely.
Yeah. And coming attractions, we in June, we anticipate having the Imperial Service Area plan for review. And as all of you are aware, I sent out to IID service draft service area plan to the commissioners to get eye on that. I have about over 5 pages of notes and questions and comments from the IID that I need to send them and get their response back. If any of the commissioners have had a chance to read it and have some specific questions, please email me that and I can get that with my notes over to them so we can get these things addressed. And as soon as they respond back, it would go through another review by staff and then bring it to commission for review and comments.
Is it in the packet?
No, I sent that out via email to.
And you know what, Tyler, I think maybe we need to have a sit down and so we can just review that, because I think I'm going to say that my questions and my comments are probably going to be the same as yours and the other commissioners, because I myself going through it, finding a lot of flaws, and I'm not going to say anything else about that, but there's certain things that don't add up. You know, the old saying, I might not be a smart man, but when 1 + 1 = 2, that's simple. Some of their numbers don't add up. And it's really bad.
Well, you have some inside track to that, probably.
I was going to say something like that.
Where do you work?
Yeah. Oh. And so, I mean, just looking at, you know,
yeah,
the numbers that they have on projects, budgets, and all that, it doesn't add up.
So, actually, I think David had mentioned some sort of workshop type to review, go over that IID.
We need a workshop for us. If we get the agency to come in.
A workshop typically is open to the public.
It would be open to the public.
Yeah. And so if we did something like that where they came in, it's just going to be a dog and pony show like we had last time. And that's what I don't want to see dog and pony show. I want to be able to get in here, take care of business, and then we're done.
You just have a special meeting as an information item and you guys can discuss it.
Right.
And if the IID shows up,
they can.
I mean, but at that point, they can show up. It's an information item for us, not for them.
Yeah.
Well, they're going to want to comment on everything that we're going to bring up, but it's not their chance. It's our chance to talk.
Okay. For sure. And then also in June, a couple more policies. As you see on the agenda, we have some policies here today. In June, I anticipate to have a couple others, the records retention policy and an investment policy. So those are the coming attractions. That's all I have, Vice Chair.
Thank you very much.
Anything from legal?
Nope. Ma'am? No. All right. So we'll move on to item 8A, withdrawal from Imperial Valley Telecommunications Authority, IVTA.
Let's see if I can operate this. Okay, this item is regarding Imperial LAFCO's continued participation in the Imperial Valley Telecommunications Authority, or IVTA. Today, I'm going to present staff's recommendation to withdraw from the JPA due to cost and potential future debt obligations. Let's see if I can do this. Hey, it works. Okay, IVTA is a joint powers authority originally formed to provide shared telecommunications infrastructure across multiple agencies. But for a small agency like ourselves, with just 3 staff members, The ongoing financial and administrative burden has become burdensome and, in my opinion, unsustainable for our small organization. After reviewing our obligations and benefits received, staff recommends that withdrawal is appropriate and necessary.
Is this essentially internet?
Yeah, for us.
Yeah.
Well, there we go. Here are the key findings. First, the projected cost for our next year's budget is over $7,100. That pencils out to about $2,400 per employee for internet service, a significant amount for our limited budget. Second, there's a potential for large-scale future debt obligations, which could expose us financially. At the meetings that Lori had attended, there's talk about all the infrastructure needs to be repaired and refurbished, and talk of some debt obligations to cover that. And third, we've had multiple failed attempts to obtain a signed copy of the JPA agreement. And more importantly for me is any current financial audit information. We even had council draft a formal letter to them. I think that was sent out the beginning of April. And to date, I have zero financial audits from them, which to be, in my opinion, would be simple to provide. Just send us a copy. See here. Next. Oh, there it is. Okay, so legal and procedural context. Based on the JPA language, again, we don't have a signed copy, but I'm just basing on what the contract says. The terms for withdrawal are fairly clear. We must provide written notice by June 30th, a full year in advance, with the withdrawal taking effect at the end of the fiscal year, June 30, 2026. So we would, if the commission chooses, we would give notice now, but we'd be in it next year until the end of June of 26. Importantly, if we vote against any proposed long-term debt and initiate withdrawal immediately, we're not liable for that debt. Say within this next year, they try to put some debt on. If our representative votes no, then we're not obligated to pay. This protects LAFCO from exposure if IVTA moves forward with any major capital improvements. All right, next steps. There we go. If the commission authorized withdrawal, staff will submit formal written notice before the June 30 deadline. We'll also work with IVTA to calculate any outstanding costs or network disconnection fees. In the meantime, we'll ensure our representative votes no on any proposed debt and we'll continue requesting proper documentation. Options for the commission are two options before you today. Option one, adopt the resolution to withdraw from IVTA with a formal notice sent this June, or option two, deny the request and remain a member of the JPA.
Mr. Chairman, I make a motion that we adopt option one.
Got a motion for option one to adopt resolution to withdraw from IVTA effective June 30th, 2026.
Second for discussion.
Sir. Just a question, Tyler. Is there any opportunity for us to jump onto one of the county's lines? Maybe we can explore that.
The way I understand it, IVTA issues demarcation lines.
Right.
And one is dedicated to us. And the county has certain dedication, and I'm not sure how many demarcation lines. I do not believe us jumping on the county would have to support us. And I don't know what the counties.
They would probably charge you double.
So
we know somebody.
I guess the short answer, David, I don't know. I haven't explored that, but I don't see how it would be cost effective for us. The costs are still there. That's cost has got to go to somebody.
Right. No, I'm in agreement of, you know, getting rid of the agreement for the, yeah, because of the cost. But if we can partner with the county to use one of those demarcations, they have quite a few. And they're paying a lot of money too to be on in IVTA.
So yeah, I would check with them. I mean,
and the other thing,
just another opportunity,
yeah, as an option.
Yeah,
okay. Another option. Something I can explore.
Yeah,
I know
we can explore that. We did check with Spectrum, and there's their speeds are more than abundant for our needs. The rest of our tenants in there are using Spectrum. They don't have any issues with the internet, and it's roughly $200 a month, so about $2,400. We save about $5,000 now, but with a future debt obligation, potentially even more.
You know, I was also going to say, we just did brought in our own at the city. So when we lit up our city, all of our parks, all that stuff, I don't know how he did it or where he got it from, but that might be another option to look at and see if that's something we can piggyback on. I mean, it's not like it's so far away that, you know, we can't reach. But
may I ask a question?
Yes.
Are we obligated to stay in this agreement through the end of 2026?
Yeah. Per the JPA contract, agreement.
Yeah. There's not like a clause in there where we can, you know, end it.
The clause is the method to withdrawal is they need a year's notice. It has to be an official action from the commission.
From the commission. Okay.
So that's why the resolution's there for you.
Bless you.
I just thought I'd try.
Yeah.
Any other questions, comments? Okay, I do have a motion on the floor.
And you seconded, right?
Oh, uh-huh. Got a second from Mr. Salgado. The roll call vote, please.
Commissioner Amparano?
Yes.
Commissioner Falk?
Yes.
Commissioner Salgado?
Yes.
Commissioner Marquin?
Yes.
Very much. Motion passed. Moving on to item 8B, opposition letter for SB 777, Abandoned Endowment and Care Cemeteries.
Okay. Today I'm presenting Imperial LAFCO's recommended opposition to Senate Bill 777. It was authored by Senator Laura Richardson. It deals with abandoned endowment care cemeteries. Okay, SB 777 requires LAFCO to identify and, if necessary, compel a local public agency to take title and perpetual responsibility for any abandoned private endowment care cemeteries. It requires LAFCO to launch proceedings within 30 days of notice and finish the whole process within 6 months. The bill is currently parked in the Senate Appropriations Suspense File. That sounds safe, but at the end of May suspense hearings, the committee can still send it straight to the Senate floor, so we can't assume that it goes away quietly. Given that, Cal LAFCO has asked every LAFCO to weigh in now. That Colin? Tell them we're not available. Okay, so Cal LAFCO's formal stance is opposed. Under the CKH Act, LAFCO is a neutral boundary referee that responds to applications. SB 777 flips that on its head, forcing us to assign a new service to an unwilling agency. The bill provides no CEQA path, no protest provisions, and no due process guardrails. In short, it's asking us to do something that the Act was never designed to handle. Okay, in the context of the Imperial County, we have two public cemetery districts, the Central Valley Cemetery District and the Riverview Cemetery District in Brawley, small budgets, and they both have small budgets and limited service areas. I looked up to see what private endowment care cemeteries we currently have in the Imperial Valley. We have two. The Memory Garden Cemetery in Imperial, it was abandoned and foreclosed, but in 21, an LLC purchased it. So it's owned by an LLC currently. And then the other one's in Calexico Mountain View Cemetery. It's a nonprofit association that charges fees and is actively privately ran. So if either one collapses, the bill pushes the problem into some other local agency's sphere that never asked for it. And LAFCO has to make that assignment. That's an unfunded mandate waiting to happen.
So I'm sorry.
Yeah.
If we can back up. So let's say using Calexico or Imperial, they could force the cities to take those.
LAFCO can decide any public agency. We could say, okay, cemetery district, or we can say, hey, county, we can say, but it's without any analysis done. You got 6 months to assign it to somebody. And
that's very optimistic for the state to try to get things done within 6 months. They can't do anything in 6 months.
Yep. And yeah, I think that's exactly right. On the next slide here, that's one of the key concerns. Number one, CKH makes us umpires for boundaries. In my opinion, the SB 777 turns us into a perpetual care manager. There's no money, no shield. The bill hands us the keys, but no fuel, zero funding, zero mandate reimbursement, and zero liability protection. Number three, impossible clock, 30 days to start, 6 months to finish. While we're still processing, as a staff, we've still got our regular work, processing annexations, MSRs, SAPs, budget, et cetera. There's an open-ended risk. Whoever we tap inherits forever costs. Potential soil cleanup, ADA compliance upgrades, security, even fixing toppled headstones, all on somebody's local dime. Bottom line, it's a square peg in a round hole assignment that drains staff time and taxpayer dollars without facing the real problem of abandoned private cemeteries. Fiscal impact. Sending the opposition letter costs next to nothing. But if the bill passes, again, staff time, legal review, hearings, political litigation, all unfunded. Ultimately, these costs land on our local taxpayers. And should note, Imperial already is one of the lowest per capita tax bases in California. A free letter now saves a very expensive headache later. Commission options. Approve the opposition letter and authorize chair to sign. Direct staff to tweak the content of the letter that I drafted. It took what Cal Laughlin's template was, but I kind of tried to make it regarding Imperial County. Or option three, take no position. Or staff and Cal Laughlin are recommending option one.
Mr. Chairman, I make a motion to approve option one.
Okay. Got a motion? Any comments?
Second.
Second, before we vote, I do have a comment. If this SB 777 does pass and we don't, or we not necessarily we, the agency does not get done within 6 months, what are the ramifications?
Good question. I don't think it's addressed in the bill.
Well, the entire statute is just full employment for lawyers. It's just an invitation to litigation, right? Think of your agency. Hey, county or city of El Centro, we have a cemetery for you. How would you like this? You're not going to.
Yeah.
No, not going to happen.
Right.
So, okay.
So I got a motion a motion from Mr. Hawk, second from Mr. Salgado. Roll call vote, please.
Commissioner Amparano?
Yes.
Commissioner Hawk?
Yes.
Commissioner Salgado?
Yes.
Commissioner Mara Queen?
Yes.
Motion passed.
All right.
Moving on to item 8C, the discussion for establishment of reserve policies.
Okay, thank you, Chair, Vice Chair. For those of you that were here at the last commission meeting during budget discussions, it was recommended or suggested or that we formalize a reserve policy and also our purchasing policy, which are both before you today. This is a part of an ongoing effort to strengthen fiscal management and increase transparency in how we handle the public funds. Okay. The purpose of today's item is to seek your direction on formalizing a reserve policy. Specifically, we're going to look at assigned emergency reserves, which we already maintain, but informally, a minimum threshold for unassigned reserves, and several policy options for how that threshold might be set, either as a percentage or as a flat amount. Here's where we stand now. We currently have an assigned emergency reserves totaling $500,000. That's split between litigation and catastrophic building damage. Our unassigned reserves, which are not committed for any specific use, are projected to be between $76,700 and $88,600, depending on the action of our final budget item that's on the agenda later. Total expenditures for next fiscal year for the final budget are $886,000. However, we currently do not have an adopted policy defining a minimum level reserve, which it just leaves us without a formal standard for financial preparedness. Put it there. We're proposing two main components in the new policy. We want to codify our existing assigned reserves to formalize their restricted purposes. And we'd like to establish a target for unassigned reserves using either a percentage of our annual expenses or a flat dollar amount. Agencies use both methods. They're both valid. We can review each one here. Option A is a percentage of annual expenses of your annual budget. This approach scales with the size of the budget year to year. In other words, it'll go up or down depending on what your expenditures are for that year. And these are just examples. Commission can pick any percentage if they choose to go that route, but I just used 5, 8, and 10. You can see the dollar figures there. If based on the budget for next year, 10% is $88,600. In my review of what other LAFCOs are doing, I know what we did at the city of Brawley's, ours was 15%. Other LAFCOs vary. 10% seems to be the lowest that most of them that have a policy that I could find have.
But there's also more income in those LAFCOs.
Yeah. Well, some of them are. There's some that are about our size too, budget-wise. The benefits here is that reserves grows or shrinks naturally with the budget. The downside is that during lean years, it may be harder to fund to meet that. Okay, option B is a flat target amount. The commission just says, hey, we want to have a savings account for unanticipated expenses of 50 or 75 or 100K, just any amount. Those were just figures that I put out there. They don't have any meaning to the reserves levels. Flat dollar targets are easy to understand, even for those folks that think LAFCO's a comedy club. The downside is that over time, this reserve might not keep pace with inflation as the budget grows. And say the commission wants to adopt 100,000. Well, 5 years from now, we would have to bring, if that, then we'd have to bring it back and rechange the policy. That's the difference between a flat dollar amount versus the percentage. Okay, my recommendation is that the commission select one of two methods for the unassigned reserves, either a flat percent, a percent or a flat target, and formally codify the, codify the 500,000 in assigned reserves and incorporate an annual review of the reserve levels into our budget process, which we do. We do that part. Our reserves are gonna be this based on this information. So we stay proactive and responsive over time. Next steps, based on the direction of the commission today, we'll draft a formal reserve policy and we'll bring that back for adoption at a future meeting. Any questions, comments, direction?
What would you, under option A, you're looking at 5, 8, or 10%. What would you recommend, Tyler?
I recommend the 10%. As a matter of fact, when we do the final budget public hearing, I presented two options, and one of them is that at a 10% reserve. But that would be my recommendation, is 10%. It grows or shrinks with the budget year to year. I think staff does a good job of trying to make sure we're not overspending. Naturally, there's going to be inflation increases every year. But this establishes a policy that we can adhere to, and it also codifies our assigned reserves that we've been doing informally. Any of those can be changed, by the way. Yeah. Any dollar amounts, and you know, and it's good financial practice for public agencies, and also the auditors like to see that kind of stuff too, that you have a plan.
And will you have kind of like a guideline of what the reserves can be used for?
Any the assigned is there's 40,000 for litigation, so that can only be if we need to get outside attorneys to represent us, like for example the IVHD issue. 460, the other remaining of the reserves is for catastrophic building damage. Something major happened to our building, which we own, LAFCO owns. We have that reserve built in to try to repair whatever's needed. The unassigned reserves are like a city's general fund reserve that's unrestricted, can be used for whatever purpose is needed operational wise.
Comments? Okay, any direction we want to go?
Do you need a motion?
Need a motion and a option of what we want to do.
A direction so we can bring back a formal reserve policy for adoption. I didn't have any written up because I didn't know the will of the commission, which way they wanted to go.
I mean, I would make the motion to go to option A with the 10% as, you know, as advised by yourself, and bring it back to adopt.
And I will second.
Second. Roll call vote, please.
Commissioner Amparano?
Yes.
Commissioner Hawk?
Yes.
Commissioner Salgado?
Yes.
Commissioner Marroquin?
Yes.
Thank you very much for that. Moving on to item 8D, and David, purchasing and contracting policy.
Okay. We're going to present a proposed purchasing and contracting policy for Imperial LAFCO. It's intended to formalize our internal purchasing protocols and ensure financial transparency consistent with public agency standards. The purpose of this policy is fourfold. Number one, to formalize procedures that have previously been followed informally. Number two, to ensure our practices remain ethical, transparent, and cost-effective. And number three, to establish clear thresholds for purchases and contracts that define roles for both the staff and commission. And finally, to bring our approach into closer alignment with public agency best practices, particularly around approvals, competitive bidding, and record keeping. Okay, this slide outlines the authorization thresholds for goods and services. For anything purchased up to $1,000, no formal quotes are required. Executive officer approval is sufficient. An invoice would be needed for backup for documentation. From $1,001 to $10,000, it would require two written quotes, and executive officer can approve. Anything over $10,000 requires three written quotes and commission approval. It would have to be brought to the commission for approval for anything over $10,000. Also, additionally, any contract that exceeds available budget must also be brought to the commission regardless of the dollar amount. For example, if I wanted to hire a consultant to help with the IVHD, SAP, MSR, but if we didn't plan for it in the budget and say it comes in at $9,000, I would have to bring that to you for approval because we didn't plan for it in the budget.
Right.
Even though it came under the $10,000. Okay, for purchases or contracts over $10,000, a competitive solicitation process would be required. The EO consultation with Steve, legal counsel, we'll design that process. Currently, we don't have a written policy or process for those kinds of contracts. It wouldn't require prior commission approval to issue an RFP or an RFQ. In other words, if staff felt we needed an RFP to get some quotes in, we wouldn't have to get commission's approval first. But when we narrow it down to somebody that we think we need help on whatever item we're talking about, that would come to commission for approval, the actual contract. Okay, there are several special cases where standard thresholds don't apply. One of them being emergency purchases. It can be approved by the EO and reported back within 90 days or the next meeting or 90 days, whichever comes first. That's anything that would protect health, safety, or property that's needed to be paid for right away. Sole source vendors are permitted, but it would need written justification of why they're the sole source. Repeat professionals with specialized LAFCO experience may be re-engaged without requiring new quotes, subject to the commission's approval. If we had somebody that reviews our MSRs and they have the LAFCO experience and we used them in the past, we wouldn't need to reopen an RFP, go out for quotes, but the actual contract would need to come to the commission for approval. And lastly, any discount warehouse purchases like office supplies or small furniture are exempt from quote requirements, but they still require the proper documentation, mostly for the smaller items. Delegated authority. Okay. The commission may choose to delegate authority to the EO on a case-by-case basis. Vendor files are to be created and maintained by the accountant, and records will be retained in accordance with our records retention policy to ensure audit compliance, which we don't have a written one, but I'll hopefully have that for you in June. We're doing this already, keeping vendor files and what have you, but it just formalizes that for the auditors. And also something a little different, to reinforce transparency, we're instituting, this policy would institute an annual procurement report to be presented to the commission during the first quarter of each calendar year. It'll be a table that shows our contracts, service providers, the terms of it, and we'll also publish that on our website and have a running five-year report, 5 years of those reports. In other words, once we get going, you could have that. The public could go and look what our last 5 years contracts have been. So the following options for today are, you can adopt the policy as presented or propose any revisions, or I guess you could decline adoption at this time. My recommendation is to adopt the policy and formally approve the resolution, which establishes the policy moving forward. Questions, comments?
Questions? Comments, concerns, complaints?
I will move to adopt the policy.
Okay, we got to move option one.
Can you go back to
the previous? Option one is to approve the policy.
You know what I mean. Okay.
And the resolution.
All right. We got a motion for option one.
Second.
And a second. Roll call vote, please.
Commissioner Amparano?
Yes.
Commissioner Hawk?
Yes.
Commissioner Salgado?
Yes.
Commissioner Mara Queen?
Yes.
Thank you very much for that. Moving on to item 8E. Echo the appointment of an alternate public member to the commission.
No slide deck for this one, commissioners.
Right.
On March 24th, Commissioner Landeros, the alternate public member, notified staff that he doesn't wish to serve a second term. His term was up on Monday, May 5th this year, but in the CKH Act, it states that until there's an appointment, he is to serve in that position. So before you today are some options on the alternate public member. What we did is to come up, we've had two applicants apply, but what the process was, what we did was we mailed a notice to every county, to the county, each city, and each special district. We sent out a public notice on March 27th. From March 28th through April 10th, the notice was posted on the Desert Review's website and printed in their weekly paper. On March 29th, 25, the notice was posted in the Ivy Press website and printed in their paper. From April 7th through the April 10th, the notice was announced on KXO Radio, AM and FM, and posted on their website on April 7th. As I stated, we had two applicants, both from Calexico. One's Javier Moreno, who was the city representative on LAFCO until this last election, and Gilbert Grijalva, also from Calexico, self-employed, and our records show he was a commissioner from 99 to 2002. So the commission, I provided three options for the commission to consider. You can appoint one of the current applicants as the alternate member, or you can invite the two applicants to attend next scheduled commission meeting for interviews prior to making an appointment, or you can direct staff to reopen the recruitment process to solicit additional applicants before proceeding with an appointment. So,
Mr. Chairman, I would request option three and to reopen the recruitment process And first of all, I admit my the fact that I did not see this the assessment or the recruitment process. So I didn't see that, and I know that there are individuals in Hopeville that feel that, you know, they have not been represented on LAFCO for a number of years. So anyway, I would request option three, and we do plan to be much more diligent about applying.
Got a motion for option three?
Second.
And a second for option three. Roll call vote on that.
Commissioner Alperano?
Yes, on option three.
Commissioner Hawk?
Yes.
Commissioner Salgado?
Yes.
Commissioner Mara Queen?
Yes.
All right, motion passes. Look forward to more applicants. With that, we're moving on to our public hearing, and I will open our public hearing at 9:17.
Thank you, Commissioner Alperano. Today, I'm presenting the final 2025-26 budget, refreshed since your March draft to reflect the lower pension bond contribution rate from ICERS. Next, can you help me here? Yeah, there we go. Purpose of the final budget. Under the CKH Act, we must adopt a preliminary budget by May 1st and the final by June 15th. Again, the only difference between the March budget and the final budget is the update. It absorbs the big change since March. The ICERS pension bond contribution obligation dropped from 6.04% to 1.08% of pensionable payroll. That cut $20K from the draft. Everything else is the same program you saw in March. Next, please. Budget overview. So that reduced. The revised budget is $886,419. That figure is up 1.74% versus last year's. But when you compare it to the March draft, it's $20,000 lower than what was presented in March. And again, the total reduction was due to the pension bond obligation rate, which was updated between March and now from ICERS. The percentage, no programs, position.
Excuse me, Tyler. What was their reasoning in that cut?
And Julie Huppin. Yeah, we didn't have the figure. We were using prior year's figure. It adjusts depending on, you know, multiple factors from ICERS. I would imagine how the fund's doing, what the pension bond obligation, if it's tiered and payments are different every year, those type of things. But we just take what ICERS gives us the percentage, and we built that in. Next, please. Okay, I presented two funding scenarios, which based on the prior action on the reserve policy would be maintain 10% reserves. But I'll review both of them in case you don't want to implement Plan B until we have a formal reserve policy. We have scenario A, agency contributions go up 1.74. We draw almost 97K from reserves, which would drop the unassigned reserve balance to under 77,000. And under scenario B, contributions rise a bit more to 3.51%. Again, the March budget had a 4.04% increase. But that means we only tap $85,000 from reserves, and we would finish with an unassigned cushion of the $88,640, which is exactly 10% of our total expenses. Reserve draw is smaller in B because the agencies front a bit more. Next slide. Revenue breakdown. Okay, here's how the money comes in under each scenario. City and county share split 50-50. Under A, it'd be $341,000 for both for all the cities combined, and then the county contribution. Under the 10% reserve, it'd be $347,000. That's about a $5,900 difference between the two. Again, no changes to the fees or the rent of $51K. And please feel free to interrupt if throughout this, if you want to go over any detailed particular expense item. It's covered in the EO report, and basically it's the same as what was presented in March, other than the pension obligation. Okay, reserves. We keep the $500K assigned. The only debate today is how much unassigned cushion you want on top, the 76.8K or the 88.6K. Next slide. The next two slides shows the same story, but in chart format. You can see scenario A erodes the unassigned slice a bit more. And if we go to B, it restores the unassigned reserves to the 10% comfort zone. Okay, wait, next slide, please, sorry. Okay, again, as you can see in bold, the only change is the employee benefits of 206,000 down from 226. Total salaries remained what was presented, 434,000. Next slide, the core services for legal, audit, networking, GIS, they remain flat or down versus last year. Again, the details in the EO report, nothing changed from the March presentation. Next slide. Same here on all these expenses. Travel drops 15% because Cal LAFCO is in San Diego. We can drive instead of fly. Julie did bring up a good point, being that San Diego is not in Cal LAFCO anymore, so they would be the host. There may be a potential for a change of venue. Cal LAFCO hasn't said anything about that yet, but if, in that case, we might have to bring the budget back if it requires flying and at a farther distance.
Well, you can't drive to Sacramento?
I drove to Yosemite last year. okay, next slide, please.
Sacramento.
Oh, that is next slide. Oh, thank you. So no capital purchases or remodel work slated. It's strictly maintenance mode. We reduced, I think, repairs and maintenance remodel by $9,000 since we don't have any planned activities for next year. Next slide is just the same chart of by percentage, hard to read, I know, of each expenditure category. As you can see, salaries and benefits make up 72% of the total budget. Next, please. So, okay, the trade-off. Scenario A is the cheaper ticket for agencies this year, but it leaves us under the informal 10%. It's informal at this point because we don't have a written policy. 10% reserve benchmark. Scenario B, costs each agency roughly an extra 1.77%, but it protects the reserve targets of 10%. Both of these scenarios protect our assigned reserves. In other words, pay me a little now or pay me a little more later. Life's favorite multiple choice question. Commission options. Adopt scenario A, no minimum reserves, unassigned reserves. Or option two, adopt scenario B, 10% unassigned reserves. Or option three, adopt budget with any commission amendments. I recommend scenario B, prudent for a 10% buffer. It only raises agencies' contributions by 3.5%. That is below the 4.04% presented in March. I'm happy to walk through any line item, but those are the headlines.
Questions?
I got a quick question, Tyler. Earlier in the meeting, you mentioned you had a meeting with the county regarding the potential RFP for consolidation of special districts. Should there be a need? Where would the money come for that, or who would fund something like that?
Supervisor Hawk and the county. Yeah, they're going to issue the RFP.
Do we have any funds set aside to do studies in the future, potentially?
This is what you have, the 88,000, if you adopt that budget for, yeah. But it's not in our planned budget, in a line item. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Is that something that you would?
Well, John Gay offered, so I wasn't going to.
No, I understand.
Yeah, but if they brought it up, or if the commission wishes to bring it up, I can. But that would have to come back for commission action.
Understood.
Yeah.
Do you recommend option two?
Yes.
I'll make that motion.
Yep. Got a motion for option two?
Second
for option two. Roll call vote, please.
Commissioner Amparano?
I'm sorry.
No, yep.
Close the public meeting at 9:27. And I got a motion now from Mr. Hawk and a second from Mr. Salgado. And roll call vote down, please.
Commissioner Amparano?
Yes.
Commissioner Hawk?
Yes.
Commissioner Salgado?
Yes.
Commissioner Mara Queen?
Yes.
Motion passed. Now we got a budget.
We have a budget.
Awesome.
Good to go.
So with that, we're going to start all over. Find me where I'm at.
Just adjournment.
Yeah. With that, we'll adjourn the meeting till next one at 09:27.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So what's CalAFCO's report?